Okay, so today we're going to talk about mostly Parshas Tazria, and we're not really going to look at the Chumash that much. We're going to look at the Mefarshim, because basically Tazria and Metzora seem to be deal mostly with the person who has Tzaras, but the beginning of Tazria talks about a woman who gives birth and she becomes Tameh. Basically, you have the story. Tazria and Metzora are like this. You have the halachos about a new mother who becomes, she's a new mother, she becomes tameh, depending, and the length of the tumah depends whether she has a boy or girl. Then we have a whole discussion about the laws of tzaras. And then in Perek Tezvav, after the laws of tzaras, at the end of Metzora, it talks about the zav and the zava, the man and the woman who has an emission, and they're also tameh. So each of these individuals, the Metzora, the new mother, the Zav and the Zava, each of them have a few things in common. So first of all, well, what are some things, well, one of the things that is in common is that each of them is Tameh. The Metzora, the Zav, the Zava, and the new mother, each of them is Tameh. Additionally, each one brings a Korban Chatas, a sinner offering before they become tahor again. So, what I sort of want to ask, the title of this year is the sin offering of the new mother. Did she do anything wrong? So, I think if you have these four categories, well, there are really three: the zav, the zava, the emission, the mitzora, the leper, and the new mother. So, if I were to ask you which of these three categories really needs a sin offering, what would you say?
Zav, for sure.
The what?
The
Why the Zav?
Because that seems to be the most common. In other words, why do you get become the Zav?
Right. So you're going to say, okay. See, so okay. That's interesting that you're saying that. Why is that more chamor than Mitzora? I don't know if it's more chamor than
Well, I
Mitzora.
think, well, they're both.
What would you say, Mike?
I would say all of them. I think it's a
Oh,
spiritual.
Herbie. Okay, sorry.
Spiritual deficiency in all of them.
In all of them. Okay, if you were to pick, if you were to pick which one on the surface seems the most chamor, I don't know, on the surface, if I had to ask the guy on the street,
Mean
the
Mitzora.
Mitzora, that's the answer I'm looking for, okay? We're going to
No
see,
question.
okay. I mean, the Mitzora, that's a story with Miriam. I don't know, that one seems to be the most severe of them all. I mean, practically also, the consequence is the greatest, right? In other words, the Metzora has to leave all three camps. So the consequence seems to be the greatest. The Zav only leaves two camps. Zav does not leave three camps. There's the Machne Shechina, the Machne Leviyah, and Machne Yisrael. The Metzora leaves all three camps. The Yoledes, that she only leaves the first camp. So I would think the Metzora is the most severe, and the Metzora, there's some hints that, again, it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah, that's not really our topic, but there are hints in the Torah that the Tzaras, like Herbie wants to suggest, that all of them come because of some kind of spiritual deficiency. So on the surface, the question is there textual evidence for that? So the easiest,
Rabbi,
yes?
why would the Yoledes be? I mean, you can always make a case that she might have said something inappropriate, but on the surface, why would you include her even in this category?
So good. That's my question, Mark. That's if everyone knew the answer this year, then we would be done with. That's my question, Mark. Again, let me start. What I'm trying to do is state the following: each of these three categories, they each are tame. Each of these three categories is has to bring a sin offering. Okay, so on the surface, when it comes to the Mitzora, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I'm going to try to demonstrate why that's so. I think some of us could guess why that's so. And then I'm going to make your point exactly, Mark. We try to figure out what's the sin, or why is the new mother tame, or why is she bringing a sin offering? I'm trying to get there. But the way we begin is we have to say that there seems to be textual evidence that the Mitzora did something wrong, and Okay, it's true that Miriam, we have stories of Miriam and Moshe Rabbeinu speaking negatively, and they get saras. And the Torah in Parshas Ki Tsetse, Perek Chaf Dalet, Psukim Ches and Tes, say, Hishamer Benegat Saras, Lishmor Ba'od Velasas Kuchol Asher Yoru Eschem Akodim Asher Tzivisim Tishmeru Lasos. Be careful with the plague with the of Tsaras, to guard it very much, to do whatever the Kohanim teach you or the Levim teach you. That's what you should, the Kohanim, question what's Kohanim Levim mean, but okay. You should do whatever they tell you, as they command you, this is what you should do. And then the next pasuk says, Zachor es asher aso Hashem elokecha lemiryam baderech says Mitzrayim. Remember that which Hashem did to Miriam on the road when you left Egypt. So there's this connection between these two psukim with the be careful with negat saras and remember what Hashem did to Miriam. Now, just to be clear, you know, the Sifri is the approach that Rashi uses, which probably many of us are familiar with. The Sifri says that Zachor as Asher Hashem Elokecha Asa Hashem Elokecha LeMiriam, V'chi Ma Inyan Zeh L'Zeh. What's the connection between be careful with the plague of Tzaraz and remember what Miriam did? So the fact the Torah says in the first pasuk, be careful with the plague of Tzaraz, and the very next pasuk, remember what Hashem did to Miriam. So he's telling you, if you do what Miriam did, then Hashem's going to do to you what he did to Miriam, meaning she spoke lashon hara, therefore you should not speak lashon hara. So that's the Sifri and Rashi. That's what Rashi quotes this Sifri. He says in Parshas Ki Tsetse, if you want to be careful not to get plagued with tzaraas, then the Torah says, "Al tisaper lashon hara, don't speak lashon hara." Zachor ha'asui lemiriam shedibra biachiha v'laksa b'nigoy. Be careful. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam, that she spoke negatively about her brother and she got the plague. She got negat saras. I just want to point out to you, this is not the only way to explain the juxtaposition of these two psukim. Again, Pasuk Ches says, be careful with saras, and Pasuk Tes says, remember what happened to Miriam. So this is what I just want to point out. The Rashbam has a different take on this. He just says that, what does it mean, be careful with the plague of Tzaraz to lishmorba velasos, to observe it and to do it? Not, as Rashi said, to observe and to do it, meaning to take precautions, don't sin so you don't get Tzaraz. He's saying, if you get Tzaraz, even if you're a melech like Uziyahu, who got Tzaraz, lo yichabdu liyaskiru v'yishachlu barav yeshiv, you even have to quarantine Uziyahu and don't make any exception to this rule. And remember, says the Rashbab, what Hashem did to Miriam. That even though she was a Nevi'a, even though she was a prophetess, and she was a sister of Moshe, they still quarantined her for 7 days. And the camp did not move for 7 days. So I'm just pointing out to you that, again, that you have this Sifrei, you have Rashi. The Rashbam does say that when it comes to Tzaraz, there's another way of reading these two psukim, but the reason why we associate Tzaraz with a spiritual consequence, with a spiritual sin that led to the consequence, is based on an interpretation of the juxtaposition of these two psukim, which according to Rashi. And also, based on this, the Gemara lists a whole host of examples in Erechid Daf Tezayin Amid Aleph, where he says that why do you get Negaim? Why do you get blemishes? And so there's Lashon Hara, Shvichus Dabim, Shvu Hashav, Gila Reis, Gassus Ruach, Gezel, Tzarus Ayat. That the Gemara wants to say, or Yochanan wants to say, you can get Tzaraz for 7 different blemishes, for gossiping, for murder, for swearing falsely, for forbidden relations, and arrogance, theft, stinginess. And then the Gemara goes on to point out 7 different times in Tanakh where individuals got Tzaraas, and in each of these cases, there was a different sin. It's almost as if, the point is, of course, certainly times of Tanakh, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, his providence was very evident, so there it's pretty clear, so there's much more cause and effect. Nowadays, we can't see cause and effect that much, but back then, the idea of cause and effect was very evident, very overt. So we see that tzaraas can come as a result of all these different potential sins. But my point is that it's very clear, it's at least it's a little bit clearer as to why tzaraas, someone gets tzaraas, either for lashon hara or one of these other sins. It's pretty clear, at least Chazal felt pretty strongly, that you get tzaraas for a spiritual, for some kind of sin, for some kind of sin that you committed. What's less clear is the zav, the seminal discharge, or the discharge by the man, by the woman, or the new mother. It's not so clear in the Torah where that indicates that a new mother does anything wrong that would warrant her to be taveh and to have to bring a sin offering. And there's no, and there's, one second, Baruch, one second, give me one more second. And there's no evidence, there's no, there doesn't seem to be an evidence that someone got, became a Zav necessarily because of some sin. I was like, who wanted to say something? Herb, sorry.
I thought that the problem with the Levis is that it goes back to the original sin, the Tavos. So in other words, when she was punished, that they had some healthy fines involved blood and everything else, that every time there's a birth, it kind of goes back to that reminder of the original sin, the Tavos was more guilty than Adam. And that's why, I mean, I think there's some pasuk in Navi that says that if it wasn't for that, that we would be giving birth the same way.
Wow. So you're okay. It's a okay. I hear you. That's a bit of a. It's not in my sources. That's a very fascinating pshat, Herbie, that you're saying that it's just very interesting because you're saying, you're saying their roots go back to Gan Eden, and you're saying she becomes tamei and has to bring a sin offering for nothing that she even did. It's a bit of a chiddush to say that. I'm just saying it's a bit of a chiddush to say that you become tamei for something that an ancestor did, or that you have to bring a sin offering for what your ancestor did.
Yeah, she did do something wrong. I mean, she was more, in other words, her whole involvement with it and what she had done.
No, but I'm not talking about Chava. I'm just talking about every new mother.
Oh, every new mother. Okay.
I'm saying like that's to make that claim. You know, we don't find anywhere with. We don't find, with respect to any other sin offering, that someone is bringing it on behalf of what someone did thousands of years ago. I'm just saying, so it's a bit...
Do we believe in original sin?
I mean, we believe in original sin to some extent. I mean, there are curses, quote in the Torah, based on original sin. And there are different midrashim, but how the impact that it has on future society... You know, obviously we don't believe in the doctrine of original sin the way the Christians believe in the doctrine of original sin. That's pretty clear. But that's a topic unto itself. The Torah points out that there were curses that resulted from original sin. But I'm just saying it's a bit of a chiddush.
I thought those curses for original sin were only if you did the same thing that they did.
Really? No, I don't know about that.
In other words, if I haven't done anything wrong, I'm still going to get punished for something that ancestors did, or it's because I'm following the same footsteps that they did.
You're talking about a general. You're talking about general for a sin that a parent created. It seems. It seems that when it comes to the original sin, there are these curses that b'zeis apecha tochal lechem, that by the sweat of the brow you're going to eat bread. By the woman, it says, etzav tel dubanim, with sadness, you're going to give birth to children, you're going to have difficulty during childbirth, there's going to be gender inequality. On the surface, those seem to be something that's, that those were curses to mankind in general. I think what you're referring to, Ben, is in general, I think we hold that you're not, this is what the Gemara says, that lo yamos, I don't know the exact quote, but the child is not punished for the sin of a parent, and when it says that they are, it's only kishahen ochsim b'masei avoseim. So it's only when they hold, when they're continuing the sin of their fathers. I think the original sin, I think the curses may have been something in general. So, but okay,
when you said b'zeis apecha tochal lechem, we don't bring the chatos when we make bread.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Ben. I made the point I'm agreeing with you. I made the point that you asked me to. You asked me a question. Do we believe in original sin? That there was, so I said we do believe in original sin, to accept that there were some consequences, there were some curses. But I will agree with you that the pshat that Herbie wants to suggest is a bit of a chiddush. I'm not sharing with that. It's a bit of a chiddush because that assumes that someone is bringing a sin offering for the sin of someone who committed something 1,000 years ago. I'm agreeing with what you're suggesting, Ben. Okay.
Holistically,
Rabbi.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah, getting back to the topic, we have associations between the discharge of blood and death and being tame.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where, you know, the right. Being tame could be coming from, but that, you know, that doesn't explain why there's a sin offering.
Correct. Correct. So, Baruch, just hold on 1 second. I know you had a comment, Baruch. Let me say the Kuzari because Mike touched on this. And then I'll take your comment, Baruch. Okay, you're next. So the Sefer Kuzari in Mamar Beis Os Samech. So he basically takes this point and he says that all these four categories, he deals with the tum'ah of all these four categories. And he points out that maves, he points out essentially that tuma, ritual impurity, is associated with maves, with death, which is the opposite of kedusha. Kedusha is life, right? Because what's the ultimate tuma sames? It's a corpse. So he makes the argument that the a mitzora is like a mace. Why? Because the third line here, he writes, Ever ha-mitzora kebes. The limb of the mitzora is like it's like it's dead, right? It's shriveled up, it's like it's dead. And then he says, Hazera ha-nifsat kein. So he wants to argue that whether the woman discharges blood unnaturally or whether the man discharges semen unnaturally, so that's a discharge of a life force. So you have a life force leaving your body, so that generates tuba. And you might have argued this paradoxically. He even points out that a new mother, she creates life, but what happens to her? But she loses a life that was inside of her. I know that seems paradoxical. So it's obviously, it's a tremendous simcha. I don't know if this relates to postpartum depression or anything, but the Sefer Kuzari points out that indeed when you lose a life form, So that's why you are in a state of tuma. It does not explain about the chatas, but it does explain about the tuma for all three categories. Baruch, you had a comment.
No, just that Kabbalistically, they take a different look at it. That when you're malid something, you're getting into a new situation.
Okay.
And so whatever new situation you're getting into, even in a higher spiritual plane, you can still, you know, oh, I know more than you now. That stuff.
Right.
You become haughty. I'm greater than you.
Okay.
Every new situation that you're molid, then you can get into problems.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And that's why they bring a chattas.
Every new situation can be a chattas. Okay.
In other words, because even the higher situation, uh-huh. You see a molid into the next higher spiritual situation, that could lead to problems.
So you bring the chattas as a preemptive thing. Okay. I hear it. Interesting. Okay, so let's try. But now, what we want to do, and this gets to Mark's question and then Mike's question. So maybe, you know, first of all, in general, I'm not so bothered why you're tame. You know, tuma and tahara are ritualistic halacha. It's very, they're not necessarily intuitive, right? In other words, when God makes rules about tuma and tahara, we try to figure them out as best as we can. It's not as bothersome to me whether I like the reason of the Kuzari, whether I don't like the reason of the Kuzari. At the end of the day, you know, Tuba, Tahara, those are rules of, you know, those are basically from God. So it's hard to know, you know, the exact reason. But the sin offering, it's a problem, because a problem when there's no apparent sin and there's a sin offering. So I didn't bring the source here. I just want to point out that I think someone mentioned it. Maybe Herbie mentioned it. The Ibn Ezra and the Bravanel both believe that having an unnatural discharge is a punishment for sin. The Bravanel explains that a zava, a woman who has this, she has a lot of pain at the end of her period of impurity, and but basically holds ein yisurim below avon. There's no suffering without a sin. So basically, because there's suffering, so there must be a sin. Again, he doesn't identify what the sin was, but if you get this, then you know that there was a sin. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. So according to, but it seems a stretch though. There is a real problem here. There's a problem that you're bringing in a sin offering. There's a problem that you're bringing a sin offering, and there's no apparent sin. So that's why. So you have one of two options, right? Methodologically, let's focus on the new mother. You have one of two options methodologically. Either you say that there really is a sin, you try to manufacture a sin, or you say there really isn't a sin offering. What you think is a sin offering is not really a sin offering. But you have two options, right? There seems to be no sin, but there's a sin offering. So either you have to say, no, there really is a sin, or you have to say, it's really not a sin offering. So for example, the Gemara in Meseches Nida, Daf Lamed Aleph and Beis states, Shalu Talmidei Ves Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Mipnei Ma'ar Bar Torah, Yoledes Mevi'a Korban. Why does the Torah say that Yoledes, a new mother, brings a korban? Amar Lohed. So he said to them, Bishah Shekoras Leileid, Kofetzes V'nishba Shalom Tizakek Labala. See, basically, this is before, maybe not even after the epidural, but the Gemara is before the epidural. She is basically swearing, I will never be with my husband again because I can't handle the pain. And she makes an oath, and obviously she's only making the oath because she's in tremendous pain. But l'fichach amar Torah, tavi korban. So therefore the Torah says she should bring a korban because she issued an improper oath that she's not going to be with her husband anymore. It's obviously a sin. You have to be married. You know, both parties should be with each other. And because she made this oath, and because most women who are in this tremendous pain when they're about to give birth, they'll make this oath, or enough women. So you bring a korban chatas for the sin offering that they probably did. Again, that's a bit of a stretch. It's a bit of a stretch. But that's one attempt to deal with this tension. But there's another, like I mentioned, there's another approach to deal with this. And that is, you could say that even though it's called a chatas, it's not really a sin offering. What do I mean by that? The Rabbad in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Zayin states, "V'krivo lifnei Hashem v'chiper aleha v'tahera mipkor dameha." So he talks about bringing this sacrifice, and the Rabbad says, "Yomar shetakriv kofer dafsha lifnei Hashem." He brings this. The Torah says that she should bring this kind of ransom of her soul before God, shetitar mimkor dameha, that she should become pure. Ki aisha belidita tielo me'ein nirpas mimkor mushchas va'achrei omda b'me'a nikayon o b'me'a yetziras avlal zachon lakeva. So first she's in a, you know, not this great state initially, and now after she's in a more of a cleansed state, or after the child has been formed, tavi kofer nafsha sheyaman mikora v'shetitar, she brings this ransom of her soul that she should become pure, ki Hashem, that she should become clean and pure, and once again be able to go to the mikdash, ki Hashem itale rofei kol basar mapli lasos, because Hashem heals all those everyone who needs healing. So she brings this korban to be healed. Now, why is it called the korban chatas? So there's another word that relates to chatas. You change the nekudot, lechate. What's lechate?
Clean.
To clean. To cleanse. Ah, hello, Gila. To clean, to cleanse. Very good. Okay. See, normally speaking, we bring a korban chatas, a sin offering, because we need to be cleansed from our sin that we committed. But maybe that's not always the case. Maybe sometimes, for whatever reason, we are in a state of tuma. For whatever reason, maybe because of what the Kuzari said, maybe for a different reason, we're in a state of tuma, and we need to bring a korban chatas. We need to be cleansed so that we can once again be in a purified state, and we can once again come to the Beis HaMikdash. And related to this, following the same train of thought, Rav Hirsch says, and that's why she brings the Chatas Ha'of, and she makes a neder when she brings it. She says, Yimei HaYisurim HaKruchim B'Tafkid Chayeha Lo Yishavru Et Kocha Musari. He says that when she brings this cleansing, I call this cleansing offering, it's called the Chatas, but she makes a neder. She says, these days of suffering should not break her moral strength, or should not break her, bend her moral spirit. She will accept the suffering right now. Mitoch hakarat chova l'man Yehuda hanala, from a recognition and from her elevated designation, tishmor al kocha musari achofshi, she will watch over her moral, free moral strength, kedei l'kayim et tafkid, and in order to fulfill her responsibilities. And she's going to transform her suffering into some active moral level. In other words, Rav Hirsch basically says that the Korban Chatas is a statement that she will not allow her weak and painful state, and perhaps her distance from God during these days in a state of ritual impurity, deter her from her moral mission in this world. She is ready once again to re-engage and reconnect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu at the highest level. So both the Rabban and Rav Hirsch explain that there are times when we are distant from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that we are in a state of ritual impurity through no fault of our own. But nevertheless, we bring a Korban Chatas and we affirm that despite the fact that right now we are distant due to no fault of our own, that we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to help cleanse our souls, that we're going to remain strong and we're going to remain committed to a Kadosh Baruch Hu nevertheless. In other words, it seems to me the message of the new mother who brings the Korban Chatas is the following. And sometimes when we suffer certain consequences, the first thing we should do is look internally. What did we do to cause these consequences? Don't look at other people. First try to look at ourselves, look inward, and see what can we do better. And sometimes we're going to find some fault of our own, and we try to improve on that. But there might be times, potentially, like the new mother, she didn't do anything wrong. She created a new life, a beautiful thing. So maybe technically speaking, because the baby left her, so she, and maybe she bled a lot, so she's in a state of tumah. Okay. But nevertheless, if we find ourselves in a situation where we are distant from God for whatever reason, due to no fault of our own, or we're in a bad situation due to no fault of our own, it doesn't mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't love us. It doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't care about us. But in that state, we bring a korban, we make a statement that we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though we didn't create this situation, but this challenge created an opportunity for us to dedicate ourselves to Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, even if we're in this difficult state, we still remain committed to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And perhaps that's the purpose of the Korban Chatas, a cleansing sacrifice for the new mother. Wait.